All right, good afternoon, everyone. We'll now reconvene the city council meeting of Monday, September 16th, 2024. Clerk Fuentes, please call the roll.
Thank you, Council President. Council President Pro Tem LaCava?
Present.
Councilmember Campbell? Councilmember Whitburn?
Here.
Councilmember Foster?
Here.
Councilmember Von Wolper?
Present.
Councilmember Lee?
Here.
Councilmember Campillo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno? And Council President Ilo Rivera?
Present.
Also attending the meeting are Senior Chief Deputy City Attorney Michelle Garland, Fiscal and Policy Analyst with the IPA, Jordan Moore, Council Affairs Advisor in the Mayor's Office, Coda Zizer, and myself, your City Clerk, Diana Fuentes.
All right, thank you so much. We've got a quorum. Do we have any Mayor, Council, City Attorney, IPA, or City Clerk comments? All right, seeing none, let's proceed, please.
Thank you, Council President. I'll now go over how the public can offer their public testimony during this afternoon's meeting. If you are in person, please complete a speaker slip located at the entrance of chambers and place it on top of the box indicated at the high lectern at the front of the room. Please submit your speaker slip in a timely manner to ensure proper meeting management. Council ambassadors are available near the entrance of chambers and can assist with questions and speaker slips. No further in-person testimony will be taken once the council begins virtual testimony. If you would like to participate virtually, you can do so via the webinar information found on the agenda cover page. Members of the public who wish to provide virtual testimony must enter the virtual queue by pressing the raise your hand icon or dialing star 9. The queue will close when the last virtual speaker finishes speaking or 5 minutes after in-person testimony ends, whichever occurs first. For purposes of today's meeting, the order of business is anticipated to be as follows, and you can see this on the slide shown. Item S401, item 200, item S400, which is an informational item, followed by non-agenda public comment. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. All right. If you would please introduce item S401.
Thank you. Item S401 is the resolution affirms safety as the city's highest transportation-related policy priority and direct the independent budget analyst to analyze current policies and provide the City Council policy recommendations regarding street safety. If you'd like to speak to this item, please be sure to raise your hand by pressing star 9 or the raise your hand icon. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. All right. Once our presenters are ready, please introduce yourselves for the record and let us know how much time you'd like for this presentation.
Hello, Council President Ilo Rivera, members of the Council. My name is Jeffrey Nguyen. I'm a Policy Advisor for Council District 9 of Council President Ilo Rivera. And with me is Jordan Latchford, Policy Director for Council District 3 with Council Member Webber. We need 7 minutes.
We are here before you to bring forward a resolution to affirm safety as the City of San Diego's highest transportation-related priority and to direct the independent budget analyst to analyze current policies and provide the Council recommendations to improve street safety.
Today's proposed action requests approval for a resolution in 3 parts. First, to establish safety as the city's highest priority for its transportation system. Second, to direct the Office of the IPA to review and analyze transportation-related municipal code, existing policies, and other regulations and guidelines, and provide a policy analysis. And finally, to direct the IPA to work with the Transportation Department, the Office of the City Attorney, and any other relevant staff to present the analysis and any recommendations to the Active Transportation and Infrastructure Committee with a prioritization of the implementation of temporary quick build projects.
This action relates to the strategic plan's priority area, advanced mobility and infrastructure. Efficient, safe, and convenient transportation and infrastructure options are critical to a healthy San Diego. Safety is the city's paramount concern with mobility, and the strategic plan works to create safer roads for all users, especially the most vulnerable. By improving visibility and awareness of road users through road design and environment, systemic safety measures that account for human error and injury tolerance, and reducing conflicts at intersections, San Diegans' roads will be a safer place for all to travel.
Taking a brief look back within the past decade, the City of San Diego has put forward various policies, commitments, and evaluations with the aim of improving transportation safety. These include the 2015 Vision Zero Strategic Plan, the 2016 Performance Audit of the City's programs responsible for improving pedestrian safety, the 2022 Climate Action Plan, the 2023 update to the audit, and most recently, the 2023 Complete Streets Council policy. These items approach street safety in different ways, but ultimately their goal remains to improve our transportation system with a lens of promoting multimodal mobility, increasing accessibility, and prioritizing safety.
Keeping that in mind, we wanted to share some concerns we have heard directly from our community members. Concerns raised directly from our communities include families concerned about safety during school drop-off, parents not allowing their children to walk to school, cyclists who do not feel safe traveling in dedicated bike lanes, pedestrians that are afraid to cross high volume intersections, accessibility concerns for individuals with disabilities, seniors who do not feel safe walking in their communities, and transit riders concerned about traveling to transit stops. As representatives for our respective districts, we want to let our communities know that we hear their advocacy and we share their safety concerns. Safety is experienced differently from individual to individual, and it is important that we take into consideration the legitimate experiences our communities have shared with us.
In addition to the shared experiences, on this slide is an overview of fatal crashes over the past decade. As seen on the chart, traffic fatalities have remained relatively consistent within the last few years throughout the city. Among these fatalities, a majority of these occur at intersections, with pedestrian intersection fatalities ranking at the top.
On this slide is a quick snapshot at some of the municipal codes and council policies that govern street safety in the city of San Diego. With this list, we have also noted the last time these policies have been amended. As you can see, some of the policies have not been updated since before the 2000s. It is necessary to review existing codes and policies to ensure that they remain effective, efficient, and applicable to the current environment and consider changes in technology and generally accepted practices throughout the state and the nation.
Again, here's the proposed action today. We are bringing forth this resolution because, as you can see from the information shared, there is still more work to be done in improving our safety and our transportation systems. We want to acknowledge all the hard work that our city departments do to improve our city's transportation infrastructure. However, there is no singular policy, document, or resolution that will completely solve our traffic safety goals. What we seek to do today is to acknowledge to San Diegans that we, the council, hear their concerns and affirm to them that safety is our top priority in our transportation systems. Our offices believe that in addition to the recently passed street safety policies, it's prudent to re-examine our existing policy and guidelines to ensure that they are effective, efficient, and aligned with the current transportation environment within the city of San Diego. We believe directing the Office of the Independent Budget Analyst in performing the analysis will be the most efficient and transparent path moving forward, allowing for the incorporation of both public and council input we hear today. Additionally, the IBA retains the expertise to have discussions with relevant city departments.
With this, we request of the public and council members input on their policy priorities and feedback on street safety, any specific policies of interest that the IBA should analyze, and any other additional thoughts you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Jeffrey and Jordan. Thank you so much for your work on this. All right, let's hear public comment, please.
Thank you, Council President. We have several speakers here in chambers and more in the virtual queue. Starting with Joy Senyata, if you can please come forward. You'll have a minute and a half.
Thank you, City Clerk Fuentes. Thank you, as always, good job. If we can't be safe on our streets, what happens to our quality of life? We have a transportation budget, and many hands are reaching for a piece of it. I request that street safety be its top priority, and within that budget, painting crosswalks be the top priority for safety. Most people now are transporting themselves inside boxes of safety, weighing an average of 4,000 pounds and 2 tons. Pedestrians don't have any protective shield except safe street intersections and a prayer. Yes to policies, yes to analysis, yes to quantifiable and qualifiable data, yes to budget. I approve the resolution. I approve the IBA work. Thank you, President Ito Rivera. Thank you, Councilmember Whitburn, Audit Department, City Attorney, and all others. Let's get this done now, especially crosswalks. Love to all.
Thank you. Next is Jesse Ramirez is submitting an position in favor, but did not wish to speak. After that, we have Maria Cortez, and then Denise Lopez and Manny Rodriguez. If you can please start making your way up to the front rows and the yellow reserve seats, you'll have a minute and a half.
Hello, my name is Maria Cortez. I'm a resident of City Heights for 52 years, and I love this resolution that I see. Finally, something's gonna be done. I myself walk a lot. I take transportation, but in those years that I'm living in City Heights, I have been almost hit 38 times trying to cross Marlboro and Orange Avenue. And out of those times, there was a couple of years back when I've had to put my hand out in front to stop my grandkids from almost being hurt. Why? We have a stoplight, but people want to beat the light. And to me, our lives matter. And to be almost hit 38 times, and then when your kids are trying to cross the street, that's ridiculous. There's been a lot of accidents on my street. Thanks for the speed limit sign that has finally been put in after many years of trying to get this done. I want to say thank you, Sean, and thank you, Stephen, both of you for doing this, because everybody's lives matter. It doesn't matter what community or where you're from, we all matter. And I just want to say, finally, something's getting done. But when I ask about speed bumps on my street, they tell me no, because emergency vehicles go through. That is one thing we'd like to see. Thank you.
Thank you. Denise Lopez?
Hello, council members. I'm Denise Lopez. I'm a student from UCSD, and I'm talking about support of the safety streets. Since I was a youth in City Heights, I've been able to have horrible experience walking around my neighborhood to just go to my local high school. I also used to be a soccer player who used to go to Rosa Park in our neighborhood to go have my soccer games. And now having to follow the steps my little brother also has to go. The time when me and my brothers have to go walk into our neighborhood parks, we feel danger as the stop signs don't work very well, as the streets are not safe at all for we can walk, as me and my brother have almost come to encounter of getting hit by a car. Me and my other brother, who is special needs, who doesn't know how the stop signs work, he has issues on understanding how the crosswalk works, so with the car not being able to stop for him, he almost gets hit by a car when walking from Marlboro. So I want to speak as a youth, as a resident from City Heights, that this resolution should be approved, and it's the most important thing for the safety of the community. Thanks very much, Shawnee Rivera, for placing it, and Stephen Whitberg, as it's a positive change for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Manny Rodriguez.
Good afternoon, Council. Great to see many of you. Thank you, Jordan and Jeffrey, for your fantastic work on this. I work full-time for City Heights Community Development, and I spend a lot of time speaking with families in City Heights about traffic calming and getting stuff built. Just a few weeks ago, I connected with a group of moms. They got a petition with 50 signatures for just a stop sign in front of Ibarra Elementary. Just a stop sign. And when I talk to them, I hear the fear in their voices for their kids' safety. And I want to do something about it. But once I start talking to the city and our local representatives, it's, oh, well, council policy doesn't really say this can happen because ABCD needs to happen first and they don't meet this criteria. And now, we're in this loop where it's like, well, I'm going to keep fighting for this, but there's going to be a point where I probably have to tell them, I know you have all these petitions, all these signatures, but I can't make it happen because the policy doesn't allow it to happen. And this happens a lot. Sometimes we get small wins. They'll repaint the curb, add some new signs, but sometimes they'll just come back and say, no, we can't do that. And that's because our evaluations, according to these council policies, say we can't implement these safety improvements. So I really like how, you know, Council President Rivera and Council Member Stephen Whitburn are taking initiatives to changing those council policies so that the next time a group of moms, whether it's City Heights, La Jolla, Rancho Bernardo, get a petition together, the community agree that this is needed, that it gets implemented and that the city delivers for them. So thank you, and I hope for your support on this item.
Thank you for that concluding comment. I will start the 5-minute timer here in council chambers and go to those participating remotely. I would like to also note for the record that this item received 3 comments in favor and 0 comments in opposition via our e-comment form, which have been distributed to the council. We currently have 9 hands raised in the queue, starting with Kathleen Lippitt. You'll have 1.5 minutes. Please proceed. Kathleen Lippitt, I cannot unmute for you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Council, and thank you for this recommendation and concern and acknowledgement of the community members and their concerns for especially the feeling of not being safe walking in their communities. Community members are naturally going to feel unsafe when walking in communities where alcohol or marijuana retailers are contributing to individuals walking or driving while under the influence of either marijuana or alcohol. Wherever there's a high density of bars or restaurants behaving like bars, that tendency to overserve and lead to individuals leaving those establishments and then walking through neighborhoods or driving contributes to the lack of safety and the tolerance for allowing marijuana users to smoke or vape in public is also a deterrent to having individuals and residents feel like they can walk out of their homes and walk safely around their communities. And regarding bike safety, it is not surprising that you have bike lanes proximate to vehicle lanes where vehicles are driving 40 miles an hour. This just seems like it is a high-risk situation, and I don't know how you can resolve it, but they're not compatible uses. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Next is Karina Contreras. Karina Contreras, we can please unmute.
Yes, thank you so much. My name is Karina Contreras, and my capacity is Transportation Policy Advocate for Climate Action Campaign. I just really want to applaud the council for taking this resolution up. Not only does it call out the modernization of council policies to really meet current state regulations and what the community wants to see in their own neighborhood, that street level safety, really utilizing the IVA, it really creates this complete oversight and transparency that we hope gets infused into the mobility master plan, the street design manual, the bicycle master plan, and pedestrian master plan to really create a more succinct framework to get these projects done quickly. You know, there's some projects that might just be, you know, striping and a little bit of infrastructure to other projects that are going to require, you know, a whole CIP outlook. So this resolution really can move the safe transportation infrastructure that the city of San Diego has needed for generations. So thank you for taking this up. We are 100% in favor of this resolution. Thank you.
Sorry. Next is Lori Saldana, if you can please unmute.
Yes, this is definitely an important resolution, and I support this wholeheartedly. I am wondering what specific actions you intend to take going forward or might be proposed, including some additional fines and penalties for vehicles that violate things like parking in bike lanes, especially when their actions lead to injuries, which is sadly what happened this weekend. A city employee's spouse was injured when a person parked illegally in a bike lane then, or adjacent to the bike lane, then opened the door, sending them to the emergency room with broken bones. Unfortunately, the children that were involved riding bikes with their parents were not injured. But this is a deadly, potentially very deadly violation. And I think it's worth, just like penalties in construction zones that put construction workers at risk, I think enhanced penalties in bike lanes, and then the use of those funds to go to educational programs and ensure that drivers are really feeling the impact of their actions, it is warranted to be considered. Too often, cyclists are avoiding bike lanes because, in fact, they are used by illegal parking, especially commercial vehicles. So I encourage you to kick pass this resolution, but also come up with some real teeth to protect people's safety. Thank you.
Thank you. That also concludes the 5-minute timer here in council chambers. We have 6 people with their hands raised. No additional speakers will be taken. Jason, if you can please unmute.
Hi, I'm Jason. I live in the East Village. Thank you for proposing this resolution that I highly support. I try to walk or bike everywhere instead of driving. A lot of the time, it doesn't feel safe because a lot of the roads, even downtown, are designed for cars to drive as fast as possible, with safety more as an afterthought. I have 2 specific suggestions. One, the single most impactful thing you could do for pedestrian safety would cost the city $0, and that is to disallow right turns on reds. Many pedestrians have been hit by right-turning drivers turning on red because drivers don't even slow down, never mind coming to a full stop and looking to make sure it's clear. The second thing that I think you should do is make sure that all intersections have marked crosswalks on all sides. So many intersections in San Diego, and I haven't really seen this in other cities around the world, but here, a lot of them only have 3 out of 4 sides marked with crosswalks, with a sign on the 4th side saying you shouldn't cross. What this does is it forces pedestrians who want to cross there to cross around 3 different dangerous streets instead of just 1 street. So this triples the risk to pedestrians for a minuscule increase in driver convenience. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have the original, if you can please unmute.
On the surface, this looks good, but at the same time, you're just doing this to acknowledge that you hear the people's concerns, and you should have been hearing it when you had, you know, multiple, like, excessive litigation that's been happening for years regarding the safety of streets, because people have lost their lives, have been injured due to many factors, and, you know, when you are engaging in that, that should have been your telltale sign that there's a problem and that something needs to be done about it. And, you know, there's still going to have to be shown what you're actually going to do to mitigate this. But I would also include, like, if there's fatalities, that it's not just critical to health, it's critical to somebody's life and being able to live beyond, you know, being in some kind of accident due to negligence in the city. But first of all, the roads need fixing. I mean, the roads and the sidewalks are in horrible condition. And when your climate action plan is wanting to put people into a place of walking and biking, you know, you need to make sure that the infrastructure is upkept so that they can do it in a safe manner. Especially, you know, if you want seniors and people with disabilities to be out using the roads and or sidewalks, you need to make sure that the conditions are actually safe, let alone all of the other things. So it will be proof when you actually do something about it and not just a bunch of busy work. This should have been done a long time ago, that you've already been mitigating it, but I'm sure we'll continue to see future litigation.
Thank you. That does conclude your time. Next is Blair Beekman. If you can please unmute. Blair Beekman. Oh, there you go.
Thank you, Blair Beekman. The memo of this particular city council agenda item today, with its emphasis on approving quick build road maintenance projects, although helpful, may have some worrisome qualities. As it seems, the siding can simply fast track the placement of future surveillance and data collection tech without good public oversight practices and policies. With these newly rushed quick build and safety programs, I hope we can still want to be working towards good tech, public policies, accountability, open, clear community dialogue, public oversight, and civil protections. The purpose of my letter writing to San Diego City Government and community in the past few weeks on these subjects was to offer ideas and to ask, how is the current City Council community process going to creating an overall new set of public policies for a quicker City Council approval process for the future of surveillance technology placement in local SD neighborhoods? Will its item come before City Council sometime soon this fall? It seems it can help much with the staff presentation today. I hope my recent letters around this subject can also be of help in a civil rights clarity that SD city government may be open to at this time. Thank you. I have spoken much in San Diego and for years now since my days in San Jose and the SF Bay Area that the future of bridging the digital divide and creating safe streets, bicycle, pedestrian programs, and public safety hinges on important good tech accountability policies, civil protections, public oversight practices, and such. These are more holistic concepts of building trust, community harmony, positive sustainability, and Vision Zero. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexis Anar.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anna Salayev, Executive Director of Bike San Diego. We strongly support this resolution as it underscores the City of San Diego's commitment to making street safety a top priority and will hopefully move the needle on our Vision Zero goals. With rising concerns about traffic violence and pedestrian safety, it is critical that we take proactive steps to protect all road users. While the resolution is largely symbolic, we do look forward to seeing the IBA's recommendations. As many commenters have already mentioned, there are a ton of cheap, quick-build options that can make San Diego's streets safer for all today. This resolution is a vital step toward creating safer, more accessible transportation networks for everyone in our city. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today. Thank you, Council President Ella Rivera and Councilmember Whitburn for introducing this item.
Thank you. Next is Juan Cruz, if you can please unmute. Juan Cruz, I can't unmute for you.
I'm here.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and for being giving us this platform, right? We appreciate you so much for everything you do, but we need these streets fixed. I was a victim of a hit and run in my own neighborhood because when I run up the street, the white lines ain't right, ain't too clear. And to get them fixed, I put in a couple of requests and never got done. Also, our alleys still unpaved. People that are disabled can't walk into their own alleys, throw away their own trash, so they need neighbors, they need help. And these people that are disabled and our children, my child, he likes to run. He wants to run cross country in high school, but I can't let him go by himself because I don't trust the drivers, not only the drivers, but the way it's set up, right? I don't want to see my son hurt ever. And I know you guys don't want that either. So please, please take this very, very serious. I agree, we need to find a resolution. Also our park, people are driving really, really fast up and down the park and they've done some analysis and they found that nobody speeds. When I was up there with city officials and they've seen them speed back and forth, we need some change and we need it now. It's never too late. We do appreciate everything you guys are doing, but this needs to be as a priority list for Mount Hope and the rest of the city of San Diego because we don't want to see anybody hurt. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day. Thank you, Sean. And thank you, Mr. Whitburn, and thank you, Robert, Mary, for all you guys do for our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Laura Keenan, if you can please unmute.
Hi, this is Laura Keenan, co-founder of Family for Safe Streets San Diego. I'm calling to support this resolution and thank Council President Ella Rivera and Council Member Whitburn for spearheading this. It is much needed. Our group is people who have lost loved ones to traffic crashes or have survived crashes themselves. My husband, Matt, was killed trying to ride his bike to the movies. I remember saying, see you later, but he never made it home. The street was not designed to protect Matt and he didn't stand a chance. He died at the scene. I'm confident Matt would be alive if Camino del Rio South had protected bike lane or traffic calming to limit speeds, which can be done by using quick build solutions. This resolution will make these types of improvements more accessible and expedite their implementation. My story is not unique. Each of our members have a similar, equally tragic and unnecessary story. And it doesn't stop with our group. As this resolution states, street safety is a top concern of residents, and sadly, these are valid concerns. Traffic deaths reached a 10-year high in 2023, and we shouldn't have to hope that our kids get to school safely by walking and biking. Walking and biking doesn't have to be our community's life or death decision. Our leaders have the power to make this change, and we need these tools implemented. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our last speaker is Michelle Gonzalez.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Gonzalez, and I am also part of Families for Safe Streets. My sister, Andrea Gonzalez, was killed 11 months ago when she was fatally struck by a car. And I am confident that she would not have been hit by a car had there been enough infrastructure to slow traffic and to keep her safe. So I want to support this resolution and ask you to please continue to fund safety and fund infrastructure such as quick builds that are going to prevent other people to get killed due to traffic violence. That happened to Matt Keenan, my sister Andrea Gonzalez, and it could very well happen to any of your loved ones. And so in order to prevent that, please keep funding Safe Street, Vision Zero. I mean, we all know it's not doing very well, but we definitely want this to succeed. So please continue to find the budget to find and create safe infrastructure for us. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public comment on this item, S401. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Clerk. Thank you, members of the public, for providing your testimony. I'm going to toss it over to Councilmember Whitburn to kick things off.
Thank you very much, Council President. Let me begin by extending my gratitude to today's presenters, Jordan and Jeffrey, for all of your work and dedication to addressing this issue. I'd also like to thank the Council President for all of your collaboration and forward-thinking leadership on quick build projects that will transform our city's streetscape. I also want to commend our Office of the Independent Budget Analyst for your willingness to look into this issue. Jordan Moore, Aaron Noel, our IBA, Charles Monica, really appreciate your taking on this project. I want to thank the members of the Active Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Council President Pro Tem LaCava and Council Members Van Wilpert and Foster, for your commitment to street safety this year. Our committee has engaged in some really thoughtful, forward-looking discussions about transportation safety, and I appreciate all the collaboration in moving this forward. A special thank you as well to our city's transportation department and Director Bethany Bizak, who is here with us today, for the diligent work in improving our roadways, not just for vehicles, but also for bicyclists and pedestrians. While we have much more work in front of us, I am proud of the progress that we have made, such as the adoption of our Complete Streets Council policy, our commitment to Vision Zero, and the upcoming Mobility Master Plan. And I want to acknowledge the incredible advocacy of our community members, whether you're here today or the folks who called in, those who submitted comments, those who have shared their stories with us in the past. We hear you, and your voices are critical to this effort. Just the other day, over the weekend, the husband of one of our city employees was seriously injured while biking with their one-year-old child when they were doored by a car illegally parked in a bike lane. We just have to do more to make our streets safer. And this resolution is about delivering real improvements that make a tangible difference in our neighborhoods. To that end, I would like to share with the IBA a few recommendations for policy analysis. By revisiting and modernizing our older policies, we can ensure that our streets are safer and more inclusive for everyone. In terms of Council Policy 200-08, the criteria for the installation of stop signs, I would respectfully request that the IBA look at strengthening the pedestrian volume warrant, enhancing the illumination warrant, and introducing a proactive approach to latent demand. And in terms of policy 200-07, marked crosswalk criteria at uncontrolled locations, again, I would respectfully request that the IBA look at raising the weight of pedestrian volumes, accounting for vulnerable pedestrian groups such as children and the elderly, lowering the criteria for high volume pedestrian crossings, and incorporating new technologies for safety assessments. Again, thank you to the Council President for the partnership on this. Thank you to our Transportation Department for your ongoing commitment to safety. And thank you, as always, to our street safety advocates for challenging the city to make continued improvements. And I look forward to hearing my colleagues' feedback on this issue. And with that, I'm happy to move the recommendation. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you, Councilmember Whitburn. I will gladly second. And thank you, Jeffrey and Jordan, for your work on this. Thank you, I'll reiterate the appreciation to the IBA's office for being willing to take this on, and our city attorney's office for your work in helping us draft the resolution. We've heard it today, we've heard it time and time again, that safety is a universal need that is experienced differently by everyone. And I believe we have a responsibility as a city to build a city that is in support of providing that safety to everyone. In my time in office, traffic safety has been the most consistent concern shared to us across our very, very diverse district. And I think that I'm not alone in having that experience on this council. This past year, I shared a community survey asking my communities their concerns on street safety. And when I asked what is one thing that you would make that would make your streets feel safer in your neighborhood, the number one response was related to traffic calming, speed, signals, signage, etc. When I asked them to rank their street safety priorities, their highest priority was safe intersections and crossings, followed by traffic calming in their neighborhoods. Again, this is a concern that's shared district-wide, and when I hear from community members, they can't get a traffic safety measure implemented on their street because it does not satisfy some specific scoring criteria, it bothers me. It bothers me because it's the resident of my district who simply wants to feel safer living in their neighborhood when they are running into barriers. We should be proactive in our efforts to support transportation safety and not reactive. The city should always seek to improve our policies and seek to adapt them to fit the needs of San Diegans. This in no way takes away from the tireless work that the city has already done in pursuit of safety. As a council, we lead the charge on putting budgetary funding for capital improvements to address safety enhancements in intersections, and transportation staff has put in great efforts into improving streets throughout our city. They put in hours of work, even under the weight of our budget constraints and very, very limited staffing. A part of this action includes directing the IBA to prioritize the use of quick build traffic safety enhancements. The goal of mine is to remove the barriers my community members experience to advocating for safety enhancements in their neighborhood. I mentioned barriers to satisfying the criteria to receive traffic safety enhancements. Beyond that, there are barriers on a budgetary level. With the city's budgetary constraints, I believe it is vital that we think creatively with how we utilize the budget that's available to us. While I support the city's traffic safety enhancements, oftentimes these improvements come in the form of extensive capital improvement projects that may take years to complete. That does not sit well with my community members. As Councilor Whitford said, folks have the very simple desire to know that their kids will make it safely to school, that our elders will be able to walk safely around their community. They should not have to wait years for those changes to be made. And not every project needs to be the most complicated version. I'm interested in looking at the current utilization of quick build infrastructure improvement throughout the city and how the council can support the policies for the use of permanent or interim quick build infrastructure to supplement our capital improvement projects. Additionally, I'm curious how quick build infrastructure can reduce the funding burden on existing and future capital improvements. Thank you again, Councilor Whitburn. I very much appreciate the recommendations that you just made. Very much looking forward to the work that you and your committee do on this very important topic, and hopefully this is an important step forward in making every part of our city feel safer. That concludes my second. I will now turn to Councilmember Lee.
Thank you, Council President. Thank you, Ms. Lasher and Ms. Norman, for your presentation and your work on this. Thank you especially to our Active Transportation Infrastructure Chair, Councilmember Whitburn, as well as Council President Ayla Rivera for your leadership in bringing this resolution forward. Community safety is certainly paramount for all of our city's operations and assets. And that is especially true when it comes to our transportation infrastructure. The need for safety extends to all users of our streets, whether you walk, cycle, drive, or even choose to take public transit. Safe streets, I think we've heard, applies in every community, in every district, and throughout the city. Just two examples that I think of in my district in particular. In Mira Mesa, we continue to seek to address pedestrian fatalities that have disproportionately impacted the elderly. University City, we've heard from numerous parents of school-aged children, especially elementary school children, where their families simply have a desire to be able to walk or to bike to school without fearing for their safety going down the street. And of course, we must continue to do our part as a council to prioritize the policies and especially the funding necessary to not only maintain, but to improve our transportation infrastructure in order to provide a reliable, affordable, safe, and efficient network for the various modes of transportation that our residents use on a daily basis. I especially appreciate the effort to recognize that the city's transportation plans and policies, everything from the Mobility Master Plan to Vision Zero to our Climate Action Plan, as well as various segments of our municipal code and the various council policies that have been identified as examples, are all interconnected with our efforts to reach our mobility and safety goals. One such example I think of is our city's pavement management plan, which my colleagues here have advocated for, which calls for significant increased investments in road repairs, and which ultimately must work in tandem with these efforts to create safer streets, especially as safety on our streets begins even with the maintenance and enhancements that we expect to see on our roads. So I look forward to the IBA's analysis of how we can strengthen our transportation policies, specifically with the focus on prioritizing implementation of quick loop projects that the city can consider, and that I am happy to support today's resolution.
Thank you, Councilmember Lee. Council President Pro Tem LaCalle.
Thank you, Council President. I want to thank you and Councilmember Whitburn for bringing this forward, and a preemptive thank you to the Office of the IBA for your upcoming analysis. It's certainly appreciated that every time we ask, you all say yes and deliver quality products. As mentioned in the resolution, it's important that when we talk about transportation safety, it is safety for all modes, as others have said. Vehicle safety translates to pedestrian and bike safety, and vice versa. Protected bike lane or enhanced crosswalk should also be seen as a positive improvement for motorists, as we do not want bikes in the travel lane or people crossing busy, uncontrolled intersections. None of the Muni code or policy updates mandate a certain type of mobility option, but we can all agree that when everyone feels safe, it promotes walking and riding in areas that you previously would not, and it simply just makes for better neighborhoods. For the IBA, I encourage you to consult with the Sustainability Mobility and the Transportation Departments on their efforts to ensure any changes to the Muni code and council policies are carefully coordinated with the Street Design Manual and the Master Mobility Plan. I think it's also important to add that the city has done a remarkable pivot in terms of how it looks at our streets and looking at vehicle safety, pedestrian safety, bicycle safety. And I think about some of the new technology that's been introduced over the past several years, including delayed green at intersections to make it safer for pedestrian, HOCs, lighting, pedestrian activating lighting, V-calming lighting. These are remarkable changes that 10 years ago we didn't see, and I don't think there even shows up in any of our very old policies that I look forward to updates on. I think it also needs to be said that at the end of the day, there are still bad actors. Motorists are more concerned about how they get from point A to point B, as opposed to who else might be on that roadway. And given the way legislation and the courts operate, too often the city gets hit with litigation and therefore settlements that hurt the city and the taxpayer because of the way those laws work, and aren't necessarily because of what we have failed to do or have not done proactively. And that's a challenge for all of us. I don't know if it's because I'm an elected official for the past 4 years or because it's post-pandemic, but it sure seems people are less and less thoughtful about who else is in the road. And the number of people that I see running red lights is just rather extraordinary. Hopefully we can do changes, whether in legislation or policies or street design, that can help that, but we can't fix everything, but we should not stop for lack of trying. And so I'm certainly excited about what my two colleagues have put forward. And I should also thank the staff for the good work that they do. You all do the heavy lifting going forward. I was wondering if I could get a couple of updates. I don't know, to the mayor's office. We've talked a lot about AB 43 that allows us to drop speed limits. Can you give us an update on where that effort is at?
I will have to get back to you on that, Council President Pro Tem. I don't know if there's an update from Jordan or other staff that are on the call.
Okay.
I can give an update. The AB 43 will be, the business districts will be going to our ACI committee next month.
Oh, okay, great. Good to hear. I know a lot of people have been waiting for that. And then, since Ms. Nijak's here, I know your work is happening on the street design manual. Can you give us an update on that and how that might dovetail with this work and whether there's going to be any kind of cross-pollination between the two?
Yes, good afternoon. Bethany Bezek, Transportation Director. So I'll also comment on EB 43 as well. So the Transportation Department has received all of your requests specifically for specific locations that we, and we will be assessing those with the answers at the end of this month as far as where those fall in terms of reductions of speed limits. Yes, the complete street manual and the street design manual, those have all been worked on together in tandem with sustainability, mobility, and all the other departments that will touch work associated with street projects, whether that's transportation, ECP, and later this fall, there'll be upcoming, forthcoming updates as far as that's concerned.
Okay, great. Thank you for the good work in that direction. Again, I want to thank my colleagues for bringing this forward. Sometimes it really takes a moment like this. There are so many policies that are so very old that really need to be updated and refreshed, and it's not all often the very fun thing to be working on, but I think it is incredibly important, so thank you for that. I look forward to our progress on that. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you, Council President Pro Tem. Council Member Von Lohberg.
I want to thank both of you very much for your excellent work on this item. As policy advisors in our city, I want to thank my colleagues, Councilor Whitburn and Council President Ila Rivera, for bringing this forward. It's something we've been hearing about since we got elected, was pedestrian deaths, bicyclist deaths on the streets. Unfortunately, up in District 5, we had two bicyclists who were fatally killed within a week apart a few months ago. So I'm glad to see this is coming forward. Thank you to the IBA in advance as well for focusing on this. We are very, very close to our original Vision Zero goal, which was set in 2015, long before any of us were up here on this dais. And I'm glad that we're gonna do a renewed effort here. And this is a problem nationwide. We're seeing increased pedestrian deaths nationwide. In fact, the National Transportation Safety Board is now requiring vehicle manufacturers to determine how they could develop new vehicles to reduce pedestrian deaths, including impact zones on the hood and the grill of the car, just in case there was a person who was hit by it. I mean, that's how serious this is getting. So I'm glad that we're going to be taking action on this. Thank you to my colleagues for this. And at our Public Safety Committee meeting coming up this week, we are going to be addressing another issue which puts people at risk, which is street racing and illegal street takeovers. These are people wholly irresponsibly using their vehicles, and we've seen pedestrians killed at both street takeovers and street racing. So I'm really thankful to our San Diego Police Department Traffic Division for trying to cut down on the irresponsible use of vehicles on our roads and highways. But thank you for this, and I'll support the item.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Von Lohberg. I just want to thank my colleagues again for their participation in the conversation. I don't know what the ideal version of a community looks like, but I do think that in most people's minds, it involves community members, young and old, being able to walk around safely. There's a lot that goes into that, but certainly part of it is ensuring that the streets are safe. And when I think about the parents, and this is a great example, we've got the same thing happening in City Heights and Kensington, which is a group of parents, moms, almost always led by moms, working so hard just to make it a little bit easier for their kids to get to the school safely. And it shouldn't be that hard to do that thing. And so I'm really hopeful that what we're initiating today, it's not just the policies that come to us, but making it easier for our community members who know their neighborhoods so well to say, hey, we're seeing this on a day-to-day basis, we want to take this action, and the city to be able to respond to them so that our community members don't just feel safer, but feel more confidence that when they ask for something that they see the response that leads to tangible benefits in their community. So thank you again, Councilor Whitford, for your partnership on this. Thank you to my colleagues. Jordan, looking forward to seeing what the IBA produces. And with that, clerk, please call the roll.
I'm sorry, the voting system, please cast your vote. And that passes unanimously, 8-0, with Councilmember Campbell absent.
All right, thank you so much. Let's hear our next item, please.
Our next item is item 200. And that is approval of a request for a conflict of interest waiver from Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood, LLP. If you'd like to speak to this item, please be sure to raise your hand by pressing the raise your hand icon or *9. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. As our presenter is ready, please introduce yourself for the record and let us know how much time you'd like for this.
Rob Bartolotta, Chief Deputy City Attorney.
attorney just talk to you for a minute and then hold you to it. Please proceed. So this year we issued 3 RFPs for outside bond and disclosure council, loan council, for our 3 primary credits of water, sewer, and general fund. As you all know, we obtain loans and we issue bonds to the 3 credits, and so the idea was to have one dedicated law firm for a 5-year deal to serve each of those credits. And so we run into a circumstance here which is not uncommon, in which one of the selected firms has a conflict because it represents the state Water Resources Control Board for SRF loans, which were issued to the water utility. They were selected to represent the city for all water-related SRF loans and water transactions. And so we would just set up an ethical wall. It happens all the time. It won't impact negotiations with the state because we have a different partner and one. And basically, the state has the goal that they make the rules. So when we make asks for certain accommodations in their template contract, they rarely bend. So there isn't like a strategic hindrance to the city from granting this conflict. Sorry, Robert. All right, good. Thank you so much. All right, let's hear public comment.
There's a public comment here in council chambers. We will be going to those participating remotely. I've started the 5-minute timer, starting with Kathleen Lippitt. I'll also say that this item received no comments in favor or opposition via our e-comments. Kathleen Lippitt, if you can please unmute.
I'd just like to point out that it is very concerning when you allow an exemption. It seems to open the door for other exemptions. So if there's a conflict of interest, I think it should remain that alone without any exemptions. Otherwise, I think some policies and special interest groups could take advantage of one exemption leading to another. So thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Next is the original, if you can please unmute.
First of all, you couldn't even hear the guy that was talking. It was very, very, very low. And just that response was quite ridiculous. I don't even feel like there is any kind of, it's like, just trust us. You know, like, just trust that there's not going to be any problems that arise from this. And what Kathleen was saying is absolutely correct. You can't be having this kind of stuff take place. And that's the problem, is that people who are engaging in conflicts of interest are deciding that other people who do have a conflict of interest, it's going to be okay, and that we just have to trust that nothing is going to happen because of this. I'm sure there could have been another law firm that could have come forward that doesn't have this conflict of interest and doesn't represent the state Water Resources Board when you're doing things that have to do with water, sewer, and general funds. It's absolutely negligent to go down this path and try to placate the people and, you know, say that everything is going to be okay while you're engaged in these conflicts of interest. There's a reason why the conflict of interest codes are set forth. Doesn't mean you guys abide by them, but there's a reason for it. And it's a problem when you are going to give people exemptions, especially ones that, you know, represent exactly what you are going to be giving, you know, loans and different things to help or whatever. So this is a huge problem. I don't think that this should be passed, although I know it will be because I know how you guys work. But this just is something that the people need to pay attention to see exactly what happens and what goes on in these city meetings and who they're willing to exempt from conflict of interest when there is a huge and massive conflict of interest. So thank you for showing the people exactly where you guys stand with all of these things, but this is very negligent, and I'm sure that we will hear about this in the future when something is going wrong.
Thank you, your time has concluded. Our last speaker right now is Lori Saldana, if you can please unmute.
I just have to, as someone who has a long memory, the city of San Diego did have serious legal issues regarding the State Water Revolving Fund. To the point where there was an investigation that got tied up with other funding issues affecting the state, or the city rather, including SEC violations when Petco Park was initially being funded and built. So this is a, you know, oversight is important. I pulled up the matrix of recommendations for City Council monitoring purposes. And unfortunately for that particular item regarding training for all individuals currently employed by the city, regarding the state water resources, the state's water fund program, they were supposed to have some special training because of the violations that were uncovered during the Kroll investigation. There's nothing in the memo on the city's website indicating the council has ever discussed that training, even though it does say that the city should educate employees responsible for some of this work on different issues that came forward as a result of lawsuits, investigations, and overcharging. Ratepayers were overcharged and charged unfairly at that time. So oversight is important, and when I don't see that the council ever discussed the findings of that report when it was completed, that's a concern. If it was left up to the mayor's office, I think the council should still take responsibility for ensuring that all of these Kroll recommendations regarding training, oversight, are carried out, especially if we're going to be waiving that in cases like this. So San Diego has a long history of issues with water management. Don't create another one. Thank you.
Thank you. Your time has concluded. As was the 5-minute timer, no other speakers are in the queue. That concludes public comment on item 200.
All right, thank you so much. Looking at the materials, go to Councilmember Bumbleberg. I can hop in first and then go to you if you'd like.
You want, go ahead. Okay.
I just wanted to confirm here that the City Attorney's Office is making this recommendation as you see that the conflict waiver does not pose a detrimental risk to the city.
That's correct.
All right, and Hawkins possesses no confidential city information related to the city's water utility or its finances and will implement appropriate screening measures to protect against the sharing of confidential or strategic city information within the firm.
That's correct.
All right, I will move approval and turn to Councilmember Bumble.
Thank you very much. I'll second the motion. And I just have one question I'm a little confused in the staff report about Nixon Peabody and Hawkins. So it says the goal, the Department of Finance staff and the City Attorney's Office would prefer to authorize Hawkins' request so that we can achieve the goal of having a single law firm represent the city on all financings for each of the credits, water utility, sewer utility, and general fund. So Hawkins would then represent us on the water utility, correct? But is Nixon Peabody still our sewer utility outside council? So we'd have to do a separate action to get them.
So, yeah. So currently we have three separate contracts in place, one for each of those firms for those three credits. You guys have already done that. We also currently have a waiver continuing to go forward with the two or three SRF loans that have been in the pipeline for over a year. Is Nixon Peabody has a contract from early 23 as our loan counsel. So at the time, they would represent any all loans, sewer, water, general fund. And so now we're just trying to complete the separation so that one firm for one credit to keep things clean and straightforward. So if you guys, for some reason, said no, we're not comfortable, we just don't think, we disagree, we would still have counsel for all loans. Nixon could do it. We just don't believe that's either necessary or ideal.
Okay. All right, understood. Okay, then got it. I thank you for bringing this forward. Thank you for being so clear about the wall between the attorneys, the ethical wall for confidentiality. But I think this is fits in line with rule 1.71. I'll support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Bottle-Burke. I appreciate the second. Council President Pro Tem Lacava.
Thank you, Council President. Thank you for the short presentation. And yes, to kind of put some fine points on what my colleague said. The conflict was actually understood by the reviewing committee in the selection process. And having known that and having tried to seek the very best legal counsel to meet the city's needs, still opted to go with Hawkins.
That's right.
Okay. I'm comfortable with that. I think conflict of interest, actually understanding that up front, deciding that it is the right thing to do, the best interest of the the city and the taxpayers, and then going through the process to formalize that process is exactly what we should be doing. The last question I'll ask, those past obligations, those in terms of training of city council or departments or whatever, that has nothing to do with today's action.
It doesn't. It was hard to follow exactly what she was saying, but I think she referenced the trainings are all the DPWG required periodic securities trainings that we give to you guys. So you have been receiving those trainings every other year for almost 15 plus years now. So they have been happening.
Thank you for the clarification on that. Again, thank you. Thank you, Council President. That concludes my comment.
Thank you, Council President Pro Tem. All right, I see no additional requests to speak to this item. Please call the roll.
I'm sorry, the voting system. Please cast your vote. That passes unanimously, 8-0, with Council Member Campbell absent.
All right, let's hear item S-400, please.
Item S-400 is the biannual report on amendments to the city's conflict of interest codes in compliance with state law.
Okay, once our presenter is ready, please introduce yourself for the record and let us know how much time you'd like for this item.
That would be me, and it would be about, now I'm scared, I'll say 5 minutes.
We'll hold you to it. I like your chances with the clock clerk. Please proceed.
Thank you so much. The Political Reform Act, well, thank you, council members. I am Deanna Fuentes, your city clerk, and with me here today is Christina Hernandez, my deputy director of Elections and Information Services. The Political Reform Act requires certain officials, employees, board members, commissioners, and consultants to file a statement of economic interest and for the city to maintain a conflict of interest code. The conflict of interest code tells public officials, governmental employees, and consultants what financial interests they must disclose on their statement of economic interest, more commonly known as their Form 700. The last comprehensive update was completed in 2022. The Political Reform Act requires every local government agency to review its conflict of interest code biannually on even-numbered years. As the city's filing official, next slide, please. As the city's filing official, my office is assisting in facilitating the city department's agencies, boards, and commissions through the mandated 2024 biannual review process. Per California Government Code Section 87306.5, no later than July 1 of each even-numbered year, code reviewing bodies, in this case the City Council, are required to direct each local agency under their jurisdiction that has a previously adopted conflict of interest code to review that agency's code. The City Council took this action on June 11th, 2024, and my office provided two main training sessions to all conflict of interest code department leads that were assigned by each department director in mid-June, and several smaller training sessions as well. My staff has provided continued assistance throughout the time leading to the submission deadline established by our office as August 16th, 2024. Per California Government Code Section 87303, when a proposed conflict of interest code or amendment is approved by the code reviewing body, it shall be deemed adopted and shall be promulgated by the agency. In order to comply with this provision, we ensure that it is updated and made available on our website, and we ensure each department lead is aware of when the updates were adopted by council and is sharing it with their designees. I would like to thank all the department directors, the city attorney's office, and the department leads that worked with my office to complete their review in a timely manner to meet established deadlines and ensure greater access and transparency through the conflict of interest code process. Next slide, please. The following departments, agencies, boards, and commissions submitted potential amendments to their conflict of interest code. You can see this online since it is so very tiny here, as listed on the PowerPoint slide, but these code updates will be brought to the City Council for approval. The City Attorney's Office is now conducting a legal review of all the proposed amendments and assisting these entities to bring their proposed codes, if necessary, before the Council in the coming months. Next slide. The following departments, agencies, boards, and commissions will not be amending their conflict of interest codes as listed on the PowerPoint slide. At the time this report was prepared, there are no anticipated departments, corporations, agencies, boards, and commissions conflicts of interest codes that will no longer exist as a result of restructuring process or dissolution. But I will note, though, that there were some departments that have been combined or sunset as part of the fiscal year 2025 process, but have yet to be amended in the San Diego Municipal Code. Depending on when this occurs, some departments, such as the Economic Development Department and Engineering and Capital Projects, may be coming forward with combined conflict of interest codes at that time. Thank you for your time. This report will be made available online so that everyone can see which ones are coming up in a bigger font. And last but not least, I would like to thank my staff, Daphne Flores, filing coordinator, Mark Moreno, elections analyst, and Christina Hernandez, my deputy director, for all of their work in coordinating with all of the departments and assisting them throughout this process. Thank you, Council President.
All right, let's hear public comment, please.
We have no public comment here in council chambers and none in the virtual queue. So that does conclude public comment on this item.
Okay, I will move approval and see if there is a second.
This is an informational
item. Oh, apologies.
Sorry. They will be coming though on consent several times, so heads up.
No questions or comments? Okay.
No, sorry, but I did forget to mention that there were no comments submitted in the e-comment forum as well.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, that concludes that item.
Council President, just real quickly, I think this was a good reminder. There's some boards that exist in Muni Code, so you're obligated to identify them, that we should take a second look and see whether we should take them out of the Muni Code. I don't know if that's the city clerk's job, but maybe something to do for the city council. But I did have a question about the independent RATS oversight committee that's listed there.
It has not been sunsetted, and so as you noted, as long as it is still there, then the CIC needs to continue being approved.
Yeah. So quick note, Council Borkaba, it's correct in the actual report, it's independent RATS oversight committee, and the presentation is RATS. No offense, I'm sure it was intended to our IROC.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Thank you for the good work, City Clerk, and everybody who works on this. This is not an easy task, and appreciate you trudging through it.
Thank you for pointing this. Thank you, Council President Pro Tem. I don't see any additional requests to speak to this item, which will move us to non-agenda public comment. Clerk?
Thank you, Council President. Per Rule 2.7, non-agenda public comment is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on the agenda, but within the subject matter jurisdiction of the City Council. Each speaker will have 2 minutes. Please note if there are 8 or more speakers on a single topic, the maximum time for the topic will be 16 minutes. If you are in chambers, please submit your speaker slip to the high lectern. If you're joining us virtually, please raise your hand to speak by tapping the raise your hand icon, or if you're a calling participant, *9. Joyce Senyata, if you'd like to come forward.
Thank you, City Clerk Fuentes. Joyce Senyata, District 3. Some various topics on my words today. Number one, land acknowledgement. Thank you for sharing, speaking of the land acknowledgement with other council members. I'm really enjoying that. Could I get a copy of the land acknowledgement words? Number two, is the Golden West Hotel closing? And if so, is it included in the offline homeless data? I know they're redeveloping Horton Plaza, and that's probably been known what they're going to do with that for years. Number three, thank you for keeping Zoom for public participation. Dear public, could we please have more speakers at meetings, especially at committee? The committees are fabulous. I love them. Please come and speak or call in on Zoom on our committees. Number four, dear IBA and Department of Finance, I am concerned about the transition to the new Sherpa budget system. Please, lots of collaboration is needed on that. Thank you so much. And lastly, this morning, the sun rose once again on our beautiful working city. Thank you, everybody, for helping it work. Thank you for listening and allowing me to speak. Love to all. And go Padres!
Thank you. That does conclude our public comment, non-agenda public comment here in Council Chambers. I've started the 5-minute timer, and we currently have 11 people in the queue, starting with Terri-Anne Skelly, if you can please unmute.
Good afternoon, San Diego City Council and Mayor Ela Rivera. I volunteer on many youth projects involving the promotion of good health, healthy choices and policies. I came today to respectfully request you support the American Cancer Society in urging Governor Newsom to veto Assembly Bill 1775, on whose desk this bill sits. This bill would significantly damage long-standing smoke-free workplace protections and promote on-site consumption of highly addictive marijuana products at lounges or cafes. The American Cancer Society states, and I quote, "Our smoke-free laws are popular because they work. We must not forget or minimize the pivotal role they've played in slashing smoking rates and bringing overall tobacco use to historically low levels. It is not wise to make exceptions to long-standing laws and efforts to accommodate a for-profit marijuana industry," end quote. California boldly forged the path to protect everyone from the dangers of secondhand smoke when it became the first state to prohibit smoking in almost every indoor public space. Also, we know that today's high-potency THC products, excuse me, dangerous impairments when you're driving. So it would be a most hazardous situation to drive to a marijuana lounge, smoke, vape, or ingest marijuana products, and then drive away, endangering public safety. I ask this council to consider joining the American Cancer Society and urge the governor to veto AB 1775. Thank you for hearing my concerns this afternoon.
Thank you. Next is Laurie Saldana, if you can please unmute.
Yes, I'm calling about an issue that I have discussed before the council and the committees at various times. This is regarding a resident of San Diego who was robbed, beaten, and sexually assaulted while visiting Los Angeles. And because drugs were involved and the person's memory was impaired, they weren't aware of the assault until they returned to San Diego. And then a police officer drove them to the one hospital that does sexual assault evidence kit forensic exams, and this all took place in February. That kit has yet to be tested, according to the app that the San Diego Police Department refers them to, and that's a violation of state law. San Diego has a history of being the worst in the state of California when it comes to testing these sexual assault evidence kits in the forensic crime labs. So I will continue to speak out. And this person works full time, took a day off of work to do this test, has had medical treatment as a result of injuries sustained. I've met Marnie von Wilbert with the person in your office. I've reached out to other offices of elected officials. San Diego Police Department is in violation of state law. This kit should have been tested and analyzed and shared with the law enforcement agencies where this assault took place. So, for years, people have been testifying that the San Diego Police Department is not doing the testing as state law requires. For years, it has been researched and acknowledged at the state level that San Diego has been the worst, turning in over 1,600 untested kits when the state attorney general's office was looking at this problem statewide, the most in California. So I will not be quiet on behalf of my friend. And I will continue speaking out about why the City of San Diego's Police Department is not conforming with state law to protect survivors of violent crimes.
Thank you. Next is Becky Rapp, if you can please unmute.
Good afternoon, Chair Ela Rivera and council members. My name is Becky Rapp. On Thursday, I attended the Environmental Committee and shared an article out of the UT titled "Smoke-Free Apartment Living is Best for Everyone in San Diego County." And I'd like to share it with the rest of the council today. The article describes secondhand smoke as the smoke or vapor exhaled by the tobacco user. Secondhand smoke kills 50,000 people every year in the U.S. and contains over 7,000 chemicals, including 70 known to be cancer-causing. Secondhand smoke can be inhaled in a variety of ways, but the most common way is in our own home. A home that shares walls, ventilation systems like apartment complexes and condos. 65% of the air in one home can travel into adjoining homes. I bring this to your attention as there is a solution to the problem, and the city of Carlsbad has led the way in implementing a policy making all multi-unit housing 100% smoke-free. When surveyed, the overwhelming majority of San Diego residents support smoke-free housing policies. Property managers, healthcare providers, law enforcement, and environmental advocates also agree that smoke-free housing is a great solution. A resident has the right to smoke, yes, but residents should not have the right to impose their smoke on others. I ask this council to consider creating a smoke-free housing policy where every resident has the right to live a smoke-free life. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Peggy Walker.
Thank you, and thank you for today's street safety resolution. As a youth mentor, I have another safety issue. Yesterday, I attended a community meeting where school staff reported increasing incidents of students getting high at school with illegal intoxicating products. Some of these schools restrict access to bathrooms because so many students are vaping or consuming hemp, marijuana, or other illegal intoxicating products, even nitrous oxide. Especially concerning is the vast number of illegal hemp-derived Delta 8 products that are being sold in local smoke shops, gas stations, and convenience stores without regulation or age checks. These hemp products far exceed THC amounts allowed in permitted cannabis edibles, as much as over 100 milligrams of psychoactive THC per gummy and higher. This is outrageously high. To address this free-for-all situation, the California Department of Public Health has proposed emergency regulations for serving size, age, and other restrictions to prevent illegal intoxicating hemp sales. I'm here to urge the city support for State Department of Public Health emergency regulations to halt the marketing and sale of intoxicating industrial hemp to kids. Importantly, these state emergency regulations for hemp will make local regulation enforcement easier. Regulations would impose an interim max standard for THC per hemp package until the state sets a lower laboratory-defined standard. They'd restrict THC to non-detectable levels for inhalable products.
Thank you. Your time has concluded. Any additional comments can be sent to cityclerk@sandiego.gov, and they will be distributed. The five-minute timer has also concluded. We have 8 speakers in the queue. No additional speakers will be taken after this. Blair Beekman, if you can please unmute.
Hi, Blair Beekman. Thanks for the meeting today. It was a quick meeting today. Thank you. I just wanted to try to quickly offer good luck to ourselves in this fall period to be considering the concepts of peace and dialogue before the concepts of war and its continual use of harm and secrecy as how to solve its issues. I think if we work towards our best practices and ideals here at the local level, I've learned this here in San Diego from city governments, from attending SANDAG meetings. By doing our best practices, we're working towards peace and concepts of accountability. And working in those terms, we simply give good examples to the world how they can work towards peace as well. And the Ukraine area and Israel areas will simply have to be referring to us at some point towards best practices in the future. And it's good to start that process now here at the local level with our projects. That way, we simply have good examples ready to go and that can be shared you know, with the world, what working towards peace really means, what working towards accountability and community life and community participation means. We do those things well here at the local level. I think the world will notice, and that's important. Good luck how we can be doing that this fall. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Kathleen Lumpen.
Thank you. Good afternoon again, Council and President, Council President Ilo Rivera, sorry. I attended the Environmental Committee last week where the committee recommended amendments to the city's 2008 Lead Hazard Prevention and Control Ordinance to further protections to protect the public from lead hazards. As a public health and safety advocate, on behalf of children and young adults, it is well documented that public policies should be consistent and analyzed to ensure that they do not undermine or counter the intent of other city policies. Everyone deserves to breathe smoke-free air in their homes. 90% of Californians don't smoke. 87% of California multi-unit housing residents don't smoke. And 70% of Californians believe apartment units should be smoke and vape free. The smoke and vapor from e-cigarettes, vaping, and secondhand marijuana smoke also contain lead and chemicals that endanger public health, raise the risk of sudden infant death, respiratory and ear infections, and asthma. They are known causes of heart disease, stroke, lung cancer in adult non-smokers, and as well as atherosclerosis. Secondhand marijuana smoke contains many of the same chemicals and cancer-causing substances as secondhand tobacco, including significant levels of mercury, formaldehyde, benzene, hydrogen cyanide, and toluene, as well as lead. With respect, there are other sources of lead that need to be considered in your policies to make sure that they are addressed. And thank you very much for letting me speak.
Thank you. Next is Megan Stewart, if you can please unmute.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Council President and Council members. As a youth advocate and someone with experience in social work, I was very happy to hear of Governor Newsom's recent proposal for stricter regulations on hemp products. The governor's emergency regulations aim to protect all Californians, particularly our youth, from dangerous and unregulated products containing THC. The proposed rule would ban any detectable amount of THC in consumable hemp products and raise the purchasing age to 21 years old. As we know, San Diego's children and adolescents are at a higher risk when exposed to intoxicating substances, especially when these products are readily available in grocery stores and near schools. Governor Newsom's proposed measures address this issue by ensuring that intoxicating hemp products do not slip through the cracks of regulation, as we have seen happen in other states. Currently, hemp products are subject to far less scrutiny than marijuana, despite their potential to do significant harm. By closing regulatory loopholes, these new rules can help prevent dangerous, untested hemp products from reaching not only our youth, but also adults and seniors who purchase these products, which are causing long-term cognitive and health issues. The main goal of the governor's proposal is keeping harmful, unregulated substances out of the hands of those most vulnerable. I would like to encourage the council to consider supporting these efforts as a way to ensure San Diego continues to protect the health and well-being of all its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Kelly, if you can please unmute. Kelly McCormick.
Hello, this is Kelly McCormick. I'm a public health educator with a focus on youth substance use prevention. There's a common misconception that vaping is safer than smoking, but another new study, this one from USC, provides yet more evidence that e-cigarettes are not safe. The study of young adults showed similar cancer-linked genetic changes in both vapers and smokers. The researchers compared three groups, some exclusive smokers, some exclusive e-cigarette users, and some neither smoked nor vaped. Researchers used high-tech gene sequencing techniques to look for changes in the genes that are linked with disease development. Both smokers and vapers showed changes in a key region tied to a tumor-suppressing gene. These changes have long been linked to lung cancer, suggesting the same process that happens in smokers may also be happening in those who vape. Local leaders must do more to educate young people and their parents about the harms of e-cigarette use. Most pick up the habit when they're teenagers. In addition, I join other prevention professionals and parents in asking you to increase enforcement of the flavored tobacco ban. Numerous local tobacco retailers continue to sell flavored products illegally. Not only does this put flavored products in the hands of youth, it hurts retailers that are following the rules. In the interest of public health, upholding the law, and leveling the playing field for businesses, please enforce the flavored tobacco ban. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have the original, if you can please unmute.
I was trying to speak on that other item and I got kicked out of the Zoom. Is there any way I can get that time back? You're just gonna, no?
No, this is for non-agenda public comment.
I understand, but I was waiting for the other item and I got kicked out of the Zoom and I don't have any problems with my service. I'm wondering if I can get that time back.
And this is for non-agenda public comment.
I understand that, Sean. You're not answering my question.
Please,
see, this is
if you have non-agenda public comment, please proceed.
You guys are always engaging in conflict of interest, and so that's a problem, especially when you're deciding the things like you are and trying to make the people believe that you guys are engaged in that while you're exempting certain people. So thank you for restarting my time. So as far as the airport goes, this is something that the public needs to be aware of. In the cargo terminal, every day there are several flights that are coming out of there that the people are paying for. There are ICE detainees that are being hidden from the people because they go through the cargo area. They get on charter flights, and they're being shipped out. This is illegal immigrants who are being detained by ICE, and we're paying for them to be shipped to other detention centers. This is...
We did not hear you here in council chambers. I still see you in the Zoom.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? You can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Did you hear any of that?
Yes, we did. Your time was paused when you stopped talking, so please proceed.
Thank you. So the flights that are going out of the airport are a problem because it's being paid for by the people and it's being hidden. And like I'm saying, with all of the things that are going on with this invasion, it's a lot of hiding from the public of what's happening, and the public are the ones that are paying for it. So, you know, we need to be making people aware of that because they're happening every day. It's happening several times a day. And, you know, it's just like the hotels and the charter buses and all of the help, the RCA checks, the refugee cash assistance checks. All of the help that these illegals are getting on a daily basis, all funded by our tax dollars and the American people. We don't have a say in it. It's something that should be happening. Stephen Whitburn, I even brought forward to you something when I found the transfer site, and you were totally obfuscating the truth and trying to hide it, saying that acting like you didn't know what I was talking about. And this is the problem, is that anytime there's something that's going on with these immigrants, you guys are trying to hide it and make sure that the public don't know about it. We're the ones funding it, and you should be absolutely transparent with the people. So if anybody's down at the airport, all you have to do is go to the cargo terminal, and you can see these flights going out on a daily basis. These people are in shackles, and it's very disturbing to have to witness.
Your time has concluded. I also do see an additional speaker with the same name. I'm just unmuting to make sure that it's not technical difficulties. It's on another speaker. Okay. We'll move on to phone number ending in 3800. If you can please unmute, 3800*6.
Thank you, Barbara Gordon. I work with young people, and their mental health needs to be a priority. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, but suicide prevention is vital to address year-round. Suicide Prevention Awareness Month provides a dedicated time to come together with a collaborative passion and strength to address this difficult topic. The association of alcohol and drugs with suicidal thinking can play a big part in the actual suicide. Alcohol and drugs are influential in the feeling of hopelessness by their toxic effect. The commercialization of marijuana increases the false premise of marijuana products being natural or healthy, healthier than alcohol or tobacco, which greatly decreases the risk of harm related to its use. The main psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, THC, causes mental and psychological health problems. A recent study published in the Journal of American Medical Association described the direct connection between marijuana use and suicide. According to San Diego County, the medical examiner, almost 40% of people who died of suicide under the age of 25 tested positive for THC. I urge you to support these struggles with mental health issues that our, especially our young people are having with education regarding the harmful effects of marijuana. Policymakers must stop the normalization and increase the availability, increase availability of THC products. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Our last speaker is Catherine Rhodes, if you can please unmute.
Hello, this is Catherine Rhodes. I saw tomorrow the Housing Authority is going to come by and tell you a few different things. And one thing I saw there is they have a, I guess they have some type of request for proposals for different projects. I want to put a few projects forward. First, Mayor Gloria used to always tell everybody, when, especially Congressman Jed Campbell, that it's illegal to put homeless on state tide lands such as Mission Bay when we were trying to get the South Shore parking lot or Anza Cove or Fiesta Island. But because of the Naval Training Center, Liberty Station, Barracks H, that you guys approved for a safe parking lot, and it got approved by the California Coastal Commission, that lie has now been exposed. That means we can't actually put people at South Shore parking lot. So I would like the city to actually explore South Shore parking lot, Fiesta Island, and De Anza Cove. The other place I would like the city to look at is the existing ready-to-go 1,000 space unit at the California State Park at Silver Strand State Beach. There's 1,000 units that could be used for RVs or tents that we could actually put 1,000 homeless people there. There's also a whole bunch of money in the federal ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act funds, that are sitting still at the County of San Diego that could actually pay for all this. And I recommend that you guys try to keep Golden Hall open by asking the county for funding to keep Golden Hall open, and then for the tents in Balboa Park, I say that you follow the fire marshal's recommendations and put in 6-inch wooden platforms underneath each tent for flooding. That's it, and then you could have
Your time has concluded. Extension. If you have additional comments, you can email them in. This does conclude non-agenda public comment for today's meeting.
All right, thank you so much. We will turn to the city attorney's office to see if there's anything to report out in closed session.
Thank you, nothing to report.
All right, thank you so much. With that, we'll adjourn council to the next regularly scheduled council meeting on Tuesday, September 17th, 2024 at 10 a.m. Thank you, everyone.